The first presentation focused on the hospice provider role and how they help family caregivers manage medications. The second one focused a little bit more on the family caregiver piece. So here we've done quite a bit of qualitative research already on what their responsibilities are, which I'll discuss in the presentation. But this, we've decided to do a survey of the prevalence of what are some of the experiences and opinions that they have with medication management. Again, there's no conflict of interest issues to disclose. Again, this is an interdisciplinary group of individuals who play a key part in this research. Also wanting to acknowledge the funding agencies. We added one more participating on one more agency as one of our study sites for this study. Again, similar to what we said, the majority of hospice care is provided in the private residence, and that the about 80% of caregivers have reported medication responsibilities during for patients near the end of life. Again, in prior research, we found that medication management goes beyond just following symptoms, and that the caregivers are required to communicate and coordinate with hospice and other family members who are involved with the care of the patient. They need to store and organize the medications properly. They need to assess the patient's preferences, provide care on the spot. They also need to understand the basic medication and basic symptom knowledge in order to really perform medication management effectively. However, there's really little known in the literature about how family caregivers actually manage medications for hospice patients at home, and findings of this study can help identify ways to improve medication management and improve pain and symptom relief for the patient. So for this presentation, we'll highlight some of the preliminary findings we have about family caregiver experiences and opinions about hospice medication management. We have five sites this time, one for-profit, four non-for-profit. Again, daily census range from less than 100 to over 200 for each of the sites. We, again, worked with the different senior administrators and clinical managers to identify a convenient sample of informal, again, unpaid non-professional caregivers. They had to be 18 or above, English-speaking, and has assisted and is assisting a patient, an elderly patient, with at least one hospice medication. We focus on the elderly hospice patients because of the family dynamics that's involved with providing care with a person who is an older age versus pediatric, for example, population. So we conducted computer-assisted telephone interview surveys that lasted for about 15 minutes. Most caregivers, most of these were done at where the family members was at home. The surveys were conducted at a time convenient for them, so we did the interviews over the weekends if we had to. The surveys covered five general topics. This is based on previous work, on again, a substantial amount of qualitative research has gone into this. We identified five major areas. The first is coordination and communication, essentially how they coordinate and communicate with hospice and other family and hired caregivers. So again, hired help in the home setting. Organization of medications, accessing them, storing them, and administering medications. What are the patient's preferences in care that they want? So again, the patients, for example, refusals is a big piece. If the patient refused medication, how do you handle that? And lastly, the two general topics is medication knowledge and symptom knowledge. So those are the five. We also assess the face validity of these surveys using focus groups with the providers, as well as we perform cognitive interviews with 10 family members. Okay, so just a sample of the surveys items we did was that we had questions about an agreement scale. So a four-item liquid scale. So for example, one of the items from the medication knowledge domain, we had a patient would need morphine only if he or she is actively dying. So we give them a scale, completely disagree, all the way to completely agree. And the way today I'm gonna report the findings is I'll group the top two and the last two, disagree and agree. And by inference, we, again, reporting, for the ease of presentation, I'll just say that they believe that it's not true or they believe it is true. We also ask about another domain, patient's preferences and care. So for example, here we have an opening questions. We ask, has the patient ever actively refused his or her medications? Yes or no, we're able to give a prevalence rate for that. And then if they said yes, then we ask, did you give him or her the medicines as prescribed? And if no, would you still give him or her the medications as prescribed? And again, we gave a frequency scale here. The way I'm going to report the findings today for, again, ease of presentation, I will do more analysis in terms of whether if the way we ask influenced the way they answer the questions, is that we just combine them and we'll just say yes or no. Yes or no in terms of whether they'll still give medications if they actively refuse the medication. Again, these are also, we're going to preface this as saying that these patients are cognitively intact. So they're cognitively intact people who refuse medications. Would you still give medications as prescribed? Okay, so that's general sample issues. The description is the majority of them are female, between the ages of 50 and 70. They are primarily adult offspring, not a surprise there. For our samples, a majority are Caucasians, white, and majority of them have a high school diploma. Okay, for the first domain, these are mostly percentages that I'll be presenting. So about 88%, these are highlights. So again, we asked actually about 52 items. So I'm choosing only the highlighted, the ones that we're presenting today. So 88% has called a hospice nurse for assistance during hospice enrollment. 9% called 911 when the patient needed medical attention. This is low, but yet we actually want them to be minimal because they do not, we really want them to call hospice first, and if they have to call 911, they'll do so. And then 35% had privately caregiver helping with the patient care. So this is a pretty high number, more than a third. And then among them, 17% had a high caregiver who refused, who disagreed with the hospice medications and philosophy. 22% would rarely or never ask hospice for guidance. And that was very high. So in other words, there's a fear to ask hospice for help when it comes to coordination and communication in the home setting. 65% had other family members helping with the patient care. 29%, a higher percentage, had another family members who disagreed with hospice treatment. And 21% would rarely or never ask hospice for guidance. So this is actually one of the key findings within this domain, is that they don't understand how to ask for help when it comes to family disagreement. And family dynamics is a huge issue when it comes to hospice care. In terms of organizing medications, 95% reported tracking patients' medications. One wonders what happened to the other 5%. 72% always sometimes track the name, purpose, and amount of the medications. And a smaller amount, 69%, never or rarely track the time when the meds are given or actually given. So they do track it, but what do they track? 37% reported missing a dose of medication. So they either forgot or they missed it or something distracted them. 43% discarded syringes, old patches, and leftover meds with regular trash, and that's something that they shouldn't do. In regards to patient preferences and care, 22% did not go beyond what the patient says when assessing pain. So that's a huge number. And for any of you who knows about pain management, you definitely need to. Pain is a multifaceted symptom that you need to go beyond what the patient says. 71% had a patient who was mentally aware. So again, these are mentally intact. Of those, 87% would still give pain meds if the patient denied having pain while cringing and moaning. 78% would still give meds as prescribed even if the patient actively refused them. 26% had encountered a patient refusing meds. So this is, for this domain, this is obviously a key area that hospice providers really need to pay attention to when they help caregivers manage medications. Symptom knowledge, 31% believe, almost a third, believe that there are no common symptoms at the end of life, which is not true. 28% believe that there's no common symptoms for anxiety. In fact, a lot of them didn't know what anxiety means. 20%, about a fifth, believe that monitoring the patient for regular bowel movement was necessary only if the patient was eating regularly. So that's also a misconception. They should really definitely pay attention to that. Medication knowledge. A majority had a patient who took some sort of pills, and more than a third believe that pills could be mixed with any food or any liquids. That's also not true. 82% of the caregiver took care of patients who had some form of as-needed meds, so that's very high, obviously. 57% believed that giving short-acting meds while giving long-acting meds could lead to overdose. That's also not true. Because of the fast-acting medication you need to for breakthrough pains. A lot of them do not understand that concept. 58%, more than half, took some kind of opioids. And of those, 53% believe that stool softener should only be given when patients develop constipation. That's also not true. You should give that regularly. Almost half believe that morphine is addictive and should be rarely used. So that is a fairly low number. Actually, we expect a higher than this, but these are fairly actually experienced caregivers. And then almost half believe that meds must be given within 10 minutes of schedule. So that's also not true. It depends on the meds. So what this research really identifies as key areas that hospice nurses really need to pay attention to, or hospice providers, I should say. So what is consistent in the literature is the issue of misconception about opioids and pain meds. The areas that caregivers may need help with are handling disagreements among family members and private hired caregivers about treatment planned. So perhaps hospice needs to play a better role in facilitating or mediating the process. They need better help with tracking medications properly. For example, giving better, perhaps reminders or different kind of tracking aids. Handling patient refusal, that was a big one. Hospice really needs to help caregivers with negotiating and persuasion skills. Understanding and identifying common symptoms. This is particularly important for constipation, pain, and anxiety. This also do help caregivers better prepared for what to expect as death approaches. And also understanding short-acting versus long-acting medications, particularly for opioids. So limitations, small sample size, single city. However, understanding family caregivers' experience and opinions can help develop future interventions. Morphine, particularly morphine, particularly when there's already a history of resentment, especially because among the family members, the ones that comes to the forefront is always who becomes a primary caregiver, and as a result, if it's someone who has never been involved suddenly steps in, people question their motive, or those who've been there for a long time and no one's stepping in, the issue of caregiver burden. But in terms of specifically with medication, is the opioids. You're killing my mom, the whole traditional thing, yeah. Yes, that's I think it's important, right? So stepping back, obviously this issue of, you know, we had a lot of discussion with this, both among the investigators and with the hospice providers. The clear distinction is those who are cognitively intact, right? Because those who are cognitively impaired, the role of the family members and the nurses will have to play a bigger role in terms of what they really do need. Now, for those who are cognitively intact, when they do actively refuse, the overwhelming consensus among the providers is that you never force a patient to take anything, whether it's food or medicine. So as a result, the issue is understanding the reason behind the refusal is the key approach. Because if it's something that's just a physical thing, because they can't swallow, because it's bad taste, they can always work around that. Either crushing it, giving it liquid form, or giving another time. However, if it's something to do with depression, something to do with family dynamics, like the patient and the caregiver were never in good terms to begin with, then the social worker needs to be brought in to figure out the dynamics.
There's no coercion that you detected, because I mean, there's such a fine
Yes. So the negotiating thing is more the recommendation of what hospitals need to do, but we do find that there's definitely from the, if I understand your question correctly, the caregiver, there's definitely from the findings that the caregiver and from the qualitative piece, the caregivers are definitely coercing the patient to take medication. Primarily because they don't know how to handle it, right? Because if they're seeing someone who's refusing, but yet the hospice nurse, you need to give this medication at a certain time, I think the family member wants to give the medication because that's the only way to really relieve the symptoms that they have. And so it is not so much of a perspective of blame, but it's more of a perspective of how do you make sure that the patient understands why the medicine is given, and how can it be given with least resistance. At the end of the day, again, if they refuse, the providers again overwhelmingly says you just do not give the medication. You give it to the next interval. You let it pass, and that's really a lot of them says basically how you give medicine to a kid. You don't force the kid to do anything. You just kind of persuade them. You say, make you feel better. This is prescribed for a reason. So that it's just kind of talking to them. And I think a lot of caregivers don't have that time to persuade. They have other obligations as well. So.
We have time, so go ahead. For pain medication, now this regulation requires the physician actually to fax their prescription to the pharmacist before the pharmacist can prescribe any pain medication to the patient. So do you expect that will have an influence on the role physician play, nurse play, or caregiver play? Do you expect an increasing role of physician? Like, before, after, well, maybe they talk with the physician on the phone and physician prescribe a pain medication. And nurse can get medication like right away from pharmacists, but now they can't.
Right. That's a question. I'm not sure. I think physicians, ironically, have the least role when it comes to nursing homes and in terms of home hospice care. We've struggled with that, because a lot of times the physicians, especially in the nursing home, I have to step back in the nursing home, in that they do not. Unless they're medical directors, a lot of them are not 100% of their time devoted to nursing home care. As the same thing as some of the home hospice, where the primary care physician still can play a role in prescribing medications to the patient, even after hospice enrollment. And so I think the idea of how to loop the physician back into the decision-making process is, I think, definitely needs more work to figure that out. So.
Thank you very much.